Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. William Shakespeare wrote his plays more than 400 years ago. They're still being performed today, along with adaptations in film and opera and more. Today we'll ask why Shakespeare's works are so enduring. Later in the program, we'll be talking with directors of Logan Youth Shakespeare. Their production of The Tempest opens tonight at 6:30 in the Bullen Center in Logan, runs through a Saturday matinee. Information at loganyouthshakespeare.org. Now, in the first half of the program, USU's Department of Theater Arts will perform Shakespeare's The Merry Wives of Windsor, beginning on February 13th in the Morgan Theater in the Chase Fine Arts Center on the USU campus in Logan. Information on their productions at artsci.usu.edu/theater-arts. Next, we'll talk with two people involved in that production, The Merry Wives of Windsor. They'll introduce themselves.
My name is Leslie Brott, and I am the head of acting and a professor at Utah State University in the Department of Theater Arts. I'm also a professional actor, and for folks in Utah, they might have seen me down at the Utah Shakespeare Festival. I've done 16 seasons down there. And in this situation, we are producing The Merry Wives of Windsor in the Utah State Theater season, and we do a Shakespeare play once every other year for our students going through on their four-year tracks for the BFA acting program. And so while they're here, they'll have two opportunities to engage in Shakespeare, and this is one of them. And this year, I have been tapped to direct Merry Wives of Windsor.
All right. Very good.
I'm Ariana Whatcott. I'm a senior in the acting program here at USU, and I'm playing Mistress Ford in Merry Wives of Windsor.
All right. Very good. So would you want to be on the stage?
Yes.
Professionally? Yeah.
Yes, I'm getting my BFA in theater arts, emphasis in acting. My hopes are within the next year to move to New York, so that'll be really exciting.
So let me turn back to you. So Shakespeare every other year.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just ask you this question in general. Shakespeare, you know, what's all the shouting about? We're 400 years plus out, right?
Yeah, we are. As a matter of fact, I was writing director's notes for this play the other day, and it's we don't exactly know when the play was composed, but we can figure that it's roughly 425 years old. However, the action of the play and, I guess, the themes, the investigation of that the characters do in the play about their relationships with each other are still completely relevant today. And that's why we still do Shakespeare. I've worked at Shakespeare festivals all over the country. I'll be working at one again this summer. And we do the plays because they're relevant. The Greek plays are still relevant. Mm. And the great thing about Shakespeare is that the writing is so good. And for actors, the great thing about Shakespeare in training is that when you work on Shakespeare, every skill that you need to work on as an actor is revealed and challenged when you are working on Shakespeare's wonderful Elizabethan text. And we do it as early in the training as we possibly can. It's in their second year of training that they have their first Shakespeare class. And we know that the students will probably have opportunities to be employed at a Shakespeare festival. So we want to make those opportunities available to the students so they will be ready to go out and audition for Shakespeare festivals. And if they happen to end up in a company that is not necessarily a Shakespeare festival, but might put Shakespeare in their season, that they are equal to the task of performing in a Shakespeare play whenever it's called upon.
So you said everything is challenged. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, your script analysis, your rhetorical skills, which are your speech skills, the ability to make an argument, and then your ability to live truthfully in given circumstances, which means, oh, if I was a king in Wales in the middle of the 15th century and somebody was encroaching on my land, how would I react if there was an invasion by a conquering force? And so I'm talking about the ability to live truthfully in given circumstances. And the given circumstances are the who, what, where, when. So Shakespeare offers you an opportunity to work on all of that. Shakespeare also offers you an opportunity to work on your physical life on stage, your vocal life on stage. Mostly for actors, there's a lot of moving parts, both physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, if you will. And Shakespeare asks you to engage all of those things to, in order to give a fully realized performance that is believable. The audience wants to come and believe what they are seeing on stage. And if they can believe it, then they feel it. And Shakespeare dishes it up for you. And if you respect it and if you work on your skills, then you can honor Shakespeare and make his text live.
That's a good segue over to you preparing the role, right?
Yes.
Shakespeare. So the language, Leslie just said that, you know, the writing is magnificent, which it is, right? Language is magnificent. Shakespeare inventing words, right? And the wordplay and everything. And the depth is wonderful as well. But it is 400 years old. So how do you take that and internalize that and present it to modern audiences?
Yeah, well, something that's really awesome about Shakespeare and something that our professor Paul Mitri teaches about is that Shakespeare is a guy that we could all have pizza with. I think because Shakespeare isn't in quote-unquote modern text, or, you know, we don't speak like that anymore. Sometimes when we listen to it or we read it, it's more difficult to understand. But the truth of the matter is the circumstances that these characters are in and the utilization of the language can be done in such a way that makes it so much more accessible to audiences to understand. And we receive that training within our sophomore year so that we do have those techniques and understanding of scansion within the text, what punctuation means, what words are stressed, prose versus verse. And luckily for the show, most of it is in prose, so we don't have to worry a whole lot about that area. But I think our goal is to make it accessible to audiences so people can come and see Shakespeare and not feel like, you know, they don't understand it or that they're not smart enough to understand it, because it should be done in such a way that everyone can enjoy it.
Let me just talk about acting in general. What draws you to acting? What's the appeal?
Well, I have done theater probably since I was six. I grew up doing youth theater, community theater. I think theater and I'm Shakespeare in particular, I love, but theater in general is one of those places that is forever giving. It is the gift that keeps on giving. I think there's something about the creative space and opportunities that you get to work with so many different people that have really helped me grow as a person, not only as an actor, but as a person as well. And I think a lot of people can benefit from participating in theater, whether it's building sets, doing lighting design, acting, anything behind the scenes, or even attending the theater. It's something that really is introspective and makes people think, because we're creating stories and storytelling that is a reflection of people's real life experiences. And I think that's what makes it so special.
So I want to take it back to Shakespeare again. Is there something about that time, or is it Shakespeare just a unique genius?
Well, we do think of Shakespeare as a unique genius. What I really think of him as is courageous. And the fact that he is willing to engage all aspects of the human experience. I mean, really, this play is a little bit like watching maybe Everybody Loves Raymond. It's a comedy. You can conceptualize the play so it's highly political, and you can do a deep cultural investigation into it. We're investigating it right now for comedy, and we are working on it with regard to all the skills that are required for comedy: timing, physical precision, verbal precision, things like that. And we're also wanting to make it completely accessible to the audience. But this play was really accessible to Shakespeare's audience. He had normal, everyday people come into the theater every day. And this is the one middle-class comedy, the one town drama or city drama that we sometimes call it. And it's about them. It's not about kings and queens. It's not about people from foreign lands. It's not about elevated love stories or elevated tragedies. This is about regular people intersecting with each other day after day and enjoying each other. And so the tendency for the students, usually when they first encounter Shakespeare, is this deep reverence. And one of the things that Paul and I work on when we work with the students on Shakespeare is to try to demystify the thing and say, hey, it's just Shakespeare. He's a really good playwright. And not all of his plays are great, but some are better than others. But there's something worth doing in every single one of the plays. And aren't we lucky that he existed? Mm-hmm. I've done some other Elizabethan playwrights, and They're not quite as swell, although I think Marlowe's pretty fabulous. But Shakespeare was a genius, and he was also a regular, accessible person. And that's what I always want to give to people when they come to the theater to see a Shakespeare play. I always feel like it's important for us as actors and also just theater practitioners, all of us together, that if folks come to the theater and they don't absolutely apprehend every moment of what is going on, then we haven't done our jobs well. And that's why it's important for us to train people to do Shakespeare while they're here at drama school to find out how to make this play accessible. Because everything isn't just reality TV, I guess we could say it like that.
I want to follow up. Have you performed in what you would consider a lesser Shakespeare play?
Oh, yeah.
Do all of them get performed? And there's variability, as you say there.
Oh, yes, they all get performed. Well, there aren't very many of them, and so we want to do them. And there's always some new kind of investigation that you want to do for the plays. But I mean, I don't want to offend anybody because there's great writing in it, but I don't think Titus Andronicus is a great play structurally. There are holes in a lot of the plays. And so I've been in Titus. I've been in Timon of Athens. I've been in some plays where there's a pretty heavy lift for the director and the cast to help you with some inconsistencies of story, inconsistencies of character, inconsistencies of even the timeline. And there are things that you can either get hung up on or you can just work around the logic of the situation as best you can. But, you know, I don't think there's anything better in the world than Hamlet. I don't. Maybe Richard III, but I like Richard III because there's more fun in Richard III. But I really don't think there's anything better in the world than Hamlet. And I mean, even Shaw, who I adore, is not, you know, that's not better than Shakespeare's Hamlet. Hamlet is a mystery that is well-structured, that will feed my sense of wonder and curiosity for the rest of my life and also make my soul soar with magnificent writing.
Tell me about your character here, Mistress Ford.
Mistress Ford, yes.
Tell me about Mistress Ford.
Well, as Leslie was saying, we're in a I don't want to say average, but you know, middle class, accessible characters. She is a wife to an absolute fiend, this jealous man who believes that his wife is cheating on him with a man named Falstaff, because both Mistress Ford and Mistress Page receive letters from him of him trying to woo them and seduce them so that he can pay back some debts that he needs to repay. So I've been having a lot of fun playing with the relationship to Sydney, who plays Mistress Page. And I really think we had an English professor come and speak to us, and we have a lot of dramaturgy information packets that provide information on the relationships between the characters within Shakespeare's time. And something that stuck out to me was the line or the thought of one soul, two bodies. And I think that really encaptures a lot of the relationships within this play, specifically Mistress Page and Mistress Ford.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun. Yeah. Tell me about the interaction, the other actors, right? There's a lot of skill goes into that, right?
Yes.
Listening to each other.
We have such a heyday. During our junior year, in the program, through the curriculum, we take a restoration comedy class. Within that class, we also touch on commedia dell'arte, which is an Italian kind of clown form. So if you can think of like the most heightened clown characters that you can think of with the masks and the big long noses, we actually get to experiment with those. And I think one of the funnest opportunities within this show is that we get to practice that with the other characters with heightened text. So the classic bits that you see, you know, slipping on a banana peel where there's a one, two, three, we get to do so many of those within the show, and we get to craft these moments every night. And Leslie is gracious enough to let us find that within the rehearsal process. And I would say urge us to do more, just to go big and go home, as I would say.
I want to ask about a couple other ways to encounter Shakespeare, reading Shakespeare. which you know, a lot of people do in school,
mm-hmm.
right? It is just not, for me, it's just not the same as, you know, going to a play, but there, you know, there's a lot there you can get from reading Shakespeare, I guess.
Well, absolutely, but, and you're correct, the plays are meant to be performed. That is how they're meant to be consumed. But so many people never had the opportunity to even go to the theater. You might live in a really small town and it just might not be accessible to you. And or there might be theater in your town, but maybe nobody wants to take on a Shakespeare play. And there's so much pleasure to be gained just from reading. But there are skills that you can develop when reading Shakespeare. And you should also know that there almost every edition is punctuated differently, and that really contributes to the way you read the text, because we are not aware of the fact that we're reading, apprehending groups of words together, and the way the play is punctuated really determines our apprehension of the emotional, intellectual, spiritual content of the scene. And a lot of people may not know that there's disagreement about certain words in Shakespeare. Maybe it's sullied, maybe it's sallied, maybe it's solid for what we know of as, oh, that this too solid flesh would melt. All the editions don't agree with each other. So that's always something interesting to look at on the page. But one of the things that I always want to encourage people to do, especially, and this is a skill we teach our students, is that reading a script is a discrete skill. It's a very specialized skill. And several of our students, a lot of our students come to us and they say, oh my goodness, reading a script takes so long. And we assure them that that's actually something they're going to get really good at, but the only way to get good at it is to practice it. And then you start to read scripts quickly, you read them well, you start to see the emotional content in the play, the intellectual content in the play, and it starts to lift off the page into your imagination. But I will tell you that for a first-timer reading a Shakespeare play, and even maybe for the 10th time through, it's a pretty heavy lift. Mm-hmm. Even reading a screenplay for a current movie that's absolutely current, that's absolutely contemporary, would be a noisy process in your brain, and there wouldn't be a lot of pleasure until you learned how to read the script. It's a specific skill, but then once you do learn how to read it, it's wonderful. I mean, I feel that way when I read Shaw, too. He has exhaustive, long stage directions. Shakespeare doesn't have very many stage directions, but Shaw just blabs on. But it's you get this wonderful ability to see the world of his play, and then it's a laugh-out-loud, wonderful experience for me with the performance living in my head while I'm at home in my chair. Mm-hmm. There's still enjoyment there.
Favorite Shaw play, since you bring him up?
Oh, well, that's hard. I think probably You Never Can Tell. The three that went through my head are Heartbreak House, Misalliance, and You Never Can Tell. But I love You Never Can Tell because it's bright, it's funny, and it turns romance on its head and actually amplifies romance because it's so unexpected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wonderful. I want to ask you the same question of reading Shakespeare and this idea of getting in practice. Maybe you've gotten in practice reading the script, right? Maybe it doesn't have to be Shakespeare, right? And then being able to visualize it.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I think a large majority of the 4 years of my education here has been reading and reading and reading, which is super awesome. I think it is a skill that a lot of people could benefit from. One of my favorite things is when I am taking an English class or, I mean, any other class for that matter. Right now I'm taking a Henry VIII's Wives Queenship in Tudor England, which is really awesome and helpful to Shakespeare as well. But I love when there's so many different people in the class who maybe don't know anything about theater. We're reading Shakespeare and we're all obtaining the same skill of reading. And something, what Leslie was saying about it being accessible and these characters coming to life in these heightened stakes, Shakespeare doesn't write subtext. Everything that maybe I shouldn't say that objectively, but I would say most people would say that Shakespeare didn't write subtext. Everything that he's written in the script is what the characters are feeling and experiencing. They'll tell you what they're doing, how they're feeling. And they'll say, this is what you want. He wrote, this is what I want your character to do. But it really is reading between the lines. Something that we also learn within our training is working backwards and forwards, which a trigger and heap effect. If this event happens, what happened right before that for this thing to happen? So script analysis is a huge part of our training within our program. And it's definitely a skill that gets developed over time. But reading and reading and reading, getting your hands on any sort of scripts or plays or new works, or, you know, my friend has something that they're writing. I'm going to read this. I'm going to, you know, give my input on this. Getting in that creative state is incredibly helpful to acting and analyzing scripts.
We're getting near the end of our time here, but I'm curious about movies. A lot of people will encounter Shakespeare through movies. Mm-hmm. What makes a good Shakespeare movie?
Wow, that's a good edit will make a great Shakespeare film, because so much of the story in films, of course, is told with the picture, and so it's hard to get all of the text in from a Shakespeare play. Although Branagh did it with Hamlet, which is, I do not think of as an entirely successful film, but I do admire it. There's so much that I admire about that film. There are a couple of things that I think he mastered in that film that no one else has done as well. But I do think a good edit really matters, that you boil it down to just the essentials and then make sure that you embrace the spirit of the play, whether it be joy, tragedy, an anti-war kind of film. You could terrorize someone, you could break their hearts. But I really do think that a clear and unified visual concept and an excellent edit of the play that gives you as much action as possible on each line that the actors are required to speak, that'll serve you. And I do find that the most successful adaptations are the ones that maintain as much action through the text as possible.
I'll ask you the same thing, or, you know, about preparing. Is it useful for you to watch a film, or does that mess you up if you're going to get
most
on stage?
Most of the times, I try to avoid watching anyone else do the thing that I'm about to do as possible. Not only because, well, let me see how I can articulate this. I don't want to copy someone else's choices, not because I don't respect them or because I think they're great, but because I think I have a lot to offer as an artist within my own intelligence and skill that I can pick up from a script. And I think if I need help coming up with ideas or finding moments of brilliance, I think that's a moment when I would go to a director or even my peers watching the work that they're doing and pick that up. Not to say that I don't love a good Baz Luhrmann Romeo and Juliet, right? But I think there is a lot of integrity in following your own intuitive creativity when reading a script, rather than, you know, copying and pasting, because then you have a full understanding of your own choices and instincts as a character rather than referring to someone else's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we're out of time here. Interesting conversation. Thank you for coming in. So tell me about Merry Wives of Windsor. Where can people... When people see it?
We will be opening on February 13th, and we'll be running for another week after that. We've got 2 weekends. We also have a matinee. And for the students on campus, every artistic event is free. The students pay a fee, and so they can get a ticket at the box office, and it's absolutely free. This is a swift and efficient production of Merry Wives. It's 2 hours in length. Merry Wives, I've been in Merry Wives 5 times, and sometimes it's longer than that. And this one is swift and fun, and I think a good night in the theater. And so we'll be in the Morgan Theater in the Chase Fine Arts Center.
All right. Very good. Come and see it. USU's production of Merry Wives of Windsor of Shakespeare.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams, and our subject for the hour is William Shakespeare, his plays, his enduring legacy. By the way, to find out more about USU Theater Department, their productions, get tickets, go to artsci.usu.edu/theater-arts or search USU Theater. Following a break, we'll continue this theme with a conversation with directors of Logan Youth Shakespeare. You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're talking, of course, about Shakespeare today. His plays were written more than 400 years ago. They're still being performed today. So we wanted to ask what's all the fuss about? And we bring in now directors of Logan Youth Shakespeare. Interesting twist on this. So we bring in Joe Leary. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And we have Melissa Draper.
Yes, thanks.
Thank you. And Lisa Ward.
Great to be here.
So let's start with a little bit of history of Logan Youth Shakespeare. Somebody want to tackle that? How'd this start?
So in 2009, Mary Jackson Smith, who lived here in Logan, started this program because her kids had been involved in something similar somewhere else and really loved it. So she went back to school and learned more about theater and started this program. It was really important to her that it be open to everyone. So it's a non-audition program. And she started with a collection of scenes called Two's Company, just duo and trio scenes from different plays, and then started doing full plays uncut with young actors. And so that's how it started. The first performance was in 2010, and we've gone through a couple of directors, but still going strong.
Oh, that's great. What's the age range of the... How young can you be to be in...
Ages 9 to 19.
9 years old. Wow. That's amazing.
However, it's important that they be responsible enough. Usually have to be a strong reader because they are doing a lot of the work on their own.
Yeah, yeah. So open auditions, you just show up and see if you want to be involved. And
yeah,
you'll be involved if you want to.
Yeah, we don't have auditions. We have readings. So anybody that comes and wants to participate and is willing to do the work, they just read for the parts that they want, and we cast as we think that it will be best for the show or the shows. Sometimes we like it when there's two or three casts at a time. Right now, yeah, we just have one cast. But, yeah, they just read for the parts that they want. They list out which they want, and we cast them, and they learn the lines and all the other parts that go into making the magic, and
yeah,
it turns out really well.
So some people might think, well, yeah, Shakespeare, this is old language, sometimes hard for professional actors. How are kids going to do this?
I think that's what's so beautiful about the Shakespeare text is once you dig into it, you realize it's not that complicated and it's open to everyone. Shakespeare wrote it for everyone. He wrote it for people who couldn't read. He wrote it for everyone. And so to give it to young people to find their own meanings and their own ways to express the characters and the themes, it's quite powerful for the kids. It is amazing how little has changed in all these years.
Right, right. That speaks to the timeliness, timelessness, right?
It does, yeah.
So I imagine you tailored the roles, someone 9 years old versus 18, right?
Somewhat, but really it's about their desire. There have been young people that can learn a whole bunch of lines. It's remarkable what they can do. So if they are willing to put in the work, they can have one of the major roles.
Yeah. Now you have Hamlet coming up, I think, right?
We do.
And you might think, wow, like a 15-year-old doing Hamlet? I don't know who you're going to cast.
We have some ideas. Yeah,
yeah. they haven't had the life experience maybe to plumb all the depths, or maybe they get a lot of it.
So I want to speak to this one with life experience. We have kids that come from all over the valley. We've had kids from 7 of the 8 different high schools that are in the valley because we've got a couple of alternative high schools and we've got kids from there too. Some of our kids have had a lot of life experience. Some of our kids have had the idyllic childhood, mom and dad love me, and they're still married, and, you know, I've got this support system in my community, and they haven't had these difficult things. But when these kids from these different backgrounds come together, we've got kids who've lost a friend to cancer. We've got kids who've experienced suicidal ideation. We've got kids who, you know, their life is upside down and sometimes, and this has been their anchor for those kids. But it is also a place for them to take their own experiences that were really difficult, that were really painful, and say, my character is feeling some of this. Mm-hmm. If I was this character and I know what this feels like, how would this look like for me to perform on the stage? And so they take what they've experienced. And then the kids who have had these idyllic situations, which is great. I do not wish any of our actors to have had some of the pain and depth that some of our actors have had. But they see each other doing these roles and they start to have empathy for each other. They start to have empathy for the characters. When we do Shakespeare, you find out none of the bad guys are all completely bad, and none of the good guys are all completely good. Everybody's a mixture, which kind of is like how we as humans are. So I think that when these kids are in these roles, whether they've had this depth of experience or they just haven't, this is their first introduction to really hard things, they start to have empathy for each other. And that's really important, especially right now, to have empathy for each other as human beings.
Mm. So that segues perfectly to my next question, which is, what do the kids get out of it? So empathy, right? Some understanding. Somebody understands me, even though he's been dead 400 years, right?
Yeah.
And connections.
Absolutely.
What else do they get out of this? Yeah.
So they do form a very strong community. This happens in a lot of theater groups. They're very connected to each other. And also, like, having done Shakespeare and really dug into the text, it often helps them with their academics. Quite a few of our actors have used experience from Logan Used Shakespeare to write their college essays and have had great success with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything you want to say on that? What do the kids get out of this?
I think the experience of doing that hard of a work together and in an acting troupe, you have to all be in. If one person is out, the play suffers. So they get that sense of responsibility, that sense of really hard work, and how the fruition of that performance is amazing. It's completing a task, which I think is quite difficult for many people. And I think just having that, as Joe said, having that experience when they go on in life, even if they no longer act, they have that perseverance and determination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
And a few of our actors have gone on and pursued careers in acting and further education in acting. And also, when Mary Jackson Smith started this program, people told her, you can't do Shakespeare with young people and you can't do a non-auditioned group. And she was very determined and believed in what is possible. And so on all of our t-shirts that we have for each show, it says on the front, make not impossible that which seems unlike. And so that's just, you know, part of her legacy is this is possible.
And that's on your website, I notice, as well. Measure for Measure.
Yep.
I'm reading that. I didn't know that verbatim, so I don't want to sound like I know Shakespeare more than I do, which is a great thing, right? Yeah, wonderful thing. So I wanted to ask you the process that, I guess, the enrichment that you guys get out of this, right? Mm-hmm. The process of working with kids in something challenging like this.
I think it's been amazing to watch these kids who start out at 9 years old. They're little twigs running around the stage, and they're learning big words, and they're finding their voice. That's, to me, that's the biggest thing, is that kids are finding their voice. They may have thoughts, but they don't know how to say them yet, or they haven't got the vocabulary yet to articulate the depth of the thoughts that they are having, because 9-year-olds think big things too. And to watch these, they are little kids when they start out, to watch these actors progress and do more things and take on bigger roles, not only in acting here with us, but also, I mean, we have actors that step away when we just really think they're amazing and they could do a couple more years, but they step away because they're taking on bigger roles in their life academically, in their family life, moving on. And that's great. That's wonderful. And it's really neat to see the changes that happen, the maturity that happens, that, you know, we have, you know, you have had kids bicker sometimes, you know, just like siblings will bicker. Then to see someone who's been that little 9-year-old that maybe didn't get along with everybody to being that 18, 19-year-old that's like, hey, we all need to be running our lines. If you need help running your lines, I'll run them with you. They're the lead actor. They want to run lines with the youngest person in the troupe who's got like 7 lines. But they interact with each other. And that is a huge thing for them to take on that role of mentoring the younger youth. That's a really, really important part of this program, is that we've got these young and these medium and these older actors that are all working together. And they let each other know we're all important. We all need to be here and doing our thing.
Yeah. Anybody else want to tackle that one? What do you get out of this?
Partly, I get to hang out with my children because 2 of my kids were pretty heavily involved in this. My sister actually was in that first production. So getting to do something that is really cool and difficult with your kids is really great.
Yeah. What does your sister say now?
She loves it.
She was. What has it done for her?
I think a lot of community and also feeling comfortable speaking out and advocating for herself. She's made a lot of friends, some lifelong friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wonderful. I've been trying to think. Could you have? I don't know, Logan. Youth Greek theater, you know, it's why Shakespeare? You could have them performing something else, I guess.
I think because of what Shakespeare is, this age-old thing, and everybody knows a little bit about it, I do think it's the perfect medium. I guess I don't know enough about Greek literature to really really answer that. And I do think, again, you find this in all theater, the ability to, you know, get outside of yourself and be someone else and feel those feelings and, you know, even take on the body language of a different person. It really adds to it. So I think Shakespeare is so available, so studied. And in Utah, Shakespeare is just lauded. People love Shakespeare in this state, and we love that. They love it. We love to go to the Utah Shakespeare Festival High School competition, and you see all the high schools doing these amazing Shakespeare things. So I do think that's part of it.
I've been out of it. I didn't know they had a high school.
Well, they have a high school. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. We do it once a year.
Yeah.
We take some of the best work that we did in the seasons before, the 2 seasons before, and we prep it and get ready. There's monologues, there's duo trio scenes, and then we do an ensemble scene every year. So
yeah,
it's a lot of fun.
Also, Shakespeare was a great borrower, so he takes Greek stories. Mm-hmm. He takes a lot of mythology from a lot of places, and so it is also Logan Youth, retelling of a Greek story.
everything, yes. Why do you think Utah is so into Shakespeare?
Honestly, I think the Mormon culture has an appreciation for this classical stuff, and it's a way to, you know, say, hey, we've got culture here in Utah, too, because we were so far out west when back east was where all the culture was when the state was first starting out. And so I think that's just continued and carried on through. And it's fun. These stories, they're either funny and there's dirty jokes and there's high moral standards and there's showing you what happens when you have low moral standards. And there's depth of emotions from this great joy to this heartbreaking sorrow. And our kids do it. And we've had actors that are portraying things that the audience has held their breath for. Mm. And you can hear a pin drop and hopefully not a bag of Skittles.
Yeah, right.
But we've had some really amazing stories be told. And the audience is like, this is what it would be like. You know, we all sometimes wonder, am I going crazy? And then we see King Lear and it's like, oh, yeah, I might think I'm going crazy, but he was definitely going crazy.
Yeah,
or
we
think Romeo and Juliet, that tragedy, and we see the depth of Juliet's emotion and how, you know, we're told that, oh, that's just a silly love story but when you actually watch that play and those kids really get into it, it's not about the kids making bad choices, it's about the parents making bad choices. Mm-hmm. And the kids are the ones that are discovering this kind of thing, and arguing with like substitute teachers because they're talking about Shakespeare and they haven't read the play, or not substitute teachers, but like teacher's assistants. Anyway. Right.
Yeah, I know how that goes. Yeah. For sure. Yeah. So how do you choose the work? I guess any play is fair game. You've done it.
There are some. There are some plays that get done more than once, and there are some plays that don't get done at all. Mm-hmm. A lot of it has to do with what actors we think we'll have available. A couple of times we've had to change the play. There was a time when there were some older actors that really wanted to do Measure for Measure, but then they ended up being too busy, and so we had a lot of young actors, and that is a very heavy play that deals with some very difficult things. And so when we saw who we had available at the intro, we were like, this is not going to work for Measure for Measure. So we started over and adjusted, and that's what you do. You adjust and move forward.
Yeah. So you know, Hamlet, that surprised me a little bit, right? It's pretty heavy play. Have you done Lear, King Lear?
Yes.
We did Lear about two.
With the kids, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
We should mention that these are really big topics that Shakespeare brings up. And for every play, we bring in CAPSA to talk about the issues that are difficult. And even in the comedies, or, you know, the ones that you wouldn't think, there's some big stuff in there. And honestly, I think, as life is, the younger kids don't get it, even when they're told, because they don't have that life experience. And Hamlet, we have to think carefully about who we cast for Hamlet, especially. It's the largest role in Shakespeare's portfolio.
And 1,000 plus lines.
Yep, it's like 1,400 lines. Yeah. So ideally we know of an actor that can do that before, and we might cast that one early. And then, yeah, we work through those issues and we talk about it. We try not to go too in-depth into people's personal lives, but, make it a space that we can talk about those things. And I do think it feels a little unsafe sometimes when you are thinking about the idea, but then you go into that room and the room really is magic. I mean, I think we really work through that stuff and find the joy.
Yeah.
Also, we give ourselves the flexibility to do what works. And so we have, from time to time, had a production where there's one actor that does part of the role and a different actor that does the other part of the role. And that gives us flexibility to do things like that. Also, Hamlet Uncut is a really, really long play. Mm-hmm. In the past, when they have done it, sometimes they've had a dinner break in the middle. Which is more like the experience would have been. But there is the possibility also of cutting it into two separate productions. And the audience is leaving and coming back in between anyway. So we'll see what we end up doing.
Yeah. Just have a couple minutes left. I always like to ask actors about when things go horribly wrong on stage. What I'll ask you guys is, that's another learning. I'm sure things go wrong sometimes.
Yes.
That's a learning experience for the kids to know how to handle that, right? Or learn how to handle that.
Yes. We talk to them about you just adjust and move forward. Mm-hmm. Sometimes your line gets skipped. Sometimes the wall falls over.
Right, yeah.
That's the joy of live theater.
Yeah, that's just what happens, right? Yeah.
Mary had made up several posters as reminders of acting. One of them was "Don't chew gum." Actors don't chew gum. But she had one that says, "Even if your crown falls off and you're dead on stage, stay dead."
Right.
It just doesn't matter.
Important rule.
Keep acting.
Important rule. That's right. Yeah. Wonderful. Well, yes.
Can we just mention the information about the intro for the next show?
Yes, definitely. It's The Tempest, right?
Well,
oh, is that
the production we're doing right now is The Tempest.
Opening tonight.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So mention that first.
We have shows tonight and tomorrow at 6:30 p.m., and tickets are pay what you will at the door. And then on Saturday, we have a matinee at 2 o'clock. And
at the Bolin Center.
At the Bolin Center in the Carousel Ballroom.
Okay, so The Tempest, it's pay whatever
Pay what you will.
Pay what you will.
We want it to be accessible to everyone.
And so the first performance is tonight, 6:30.
Mm-hmm.
6:30. Goes tomorrow and the next day as well.
Yes. But on Saturday, there's only a matinee.
Only a matinee.
At 2 o'clock.
At 2 o'clock. Also, LoganYouthShakespeare.org mm-hmm. is where to find you. So then what's coming up after that?
We're going to have an intro for Hamlet on the 19th of February from 4 to 7 p.m. And that is open for everybody who is interested in seeing if this is their thing.
Also in the Bowen Center.
Oh, yes.
Also
on the third
Center.
Floor.
Mm-hmm. Third All floor. Right. Wonderful. And then when's Hamlet going to be performed?
June.
In June. Okay.
June after yeah. school is out and AP tests are done.
Right.
So we'll have some full days to practice.
Yeah. Yeah. And you'll be casting Hamlet himself, I guess, here pretty soon.
We hope.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, wonderful. Well, we've been talking with the directors of Logan Youth Shakespeare. Lisa Ward's been with us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, that's over here. Yes. sorry about that. Melissa Draper.
Yes. Thank you so much.
And then Joe Leary.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks for coming in. Appreciate it. And again, Logan Youth Shakespeare, you can find them at loganyouthshakespeare.org. And that production of The Tempest begins tonight, 6:30, Bowen Center in Logan. I just wanted to mention here at the end of the program, of course, the Utah Shakespeare Festival. They begin their season in June. They'll be performing Hamlet, Troilus and Cressida, and Twelfth Night, among other productions. Information and tickets at bard.org. Bard.org. Again, you can find Logan Shakespeare at loganshakespeare.org. And the USU Theater Department at artside.usu.edu/theater-arts, or just search for USU Theater. Our thanks to everyone who participated in the program today, and thanks for listening to Access Utah.
Skywatcher Leo T here, where it's one sky, many cultures. As I went out on my back porch facing west in the chilly evening about 11 p.m. or midnight the other night, I was able to see Jupiter in the fairly clear skies hanging up there just above with the Gemini twins around the curve from Orion and friends. I decided there was no better time to get the burgundy red Orion telescope out and focus in on Jupiter. And voila, I was able to spy two Galilean moons a ways out to the left, close together, and just barely on the right of Jupiter was another moon just a hair away from the giant of planets and another moon way out to the right. The evening felt right after this, as I've been pretty lazy lately about getting out the scope to do some more in-depth exploration for my home planet. And going way out, here's our latest Psyche probe update, launched October of 2023 from the Kennedy Space Center. This is JPL and NASA's Deep Space. Shout out to the first discovered heavy metal asteroid, which is also called Psyche. At Skywatcher Leo T, we've been reporting on this amazing project since its launch, interviewing rocket scientists from Psyche Project at JPL, and privileged enough to take a tour in March last year with a navigation scientist, an amazing person, and an amazing place. Mock-ups of the Perseverance rover roving around in the backyard, as well as Voyager models and other probes, a fascinating museum and people. Psyche has science fiction xenon blue thrusters and advanced guidance systems and is now way out there in a wide orbit of Mars. You can see its progress on the map from the Skywatcher Leo T Facebook page. The great news that I just received upon talking to a representative at JPL is that the Psyche probe is getting closer to Mars and will be conducting a flyby coming up in May and snapping a few photos of our brother or sister planet as the probe gets a gravity boost, like a slingshot, around and out into the asteroid belt and using its thrusters to tweak its trajectory toward the heavy metal destination. Once there, the navigation team will have several orbits to different observations and scientific ways of looking at it. Check out the photos courtesy of JPL and NASA on the Skywatcher Leo T Facebook page, as well as others from last week's episode and photos from photographer Richard Herman with A Vision of the Universe and many others. And closer to home and dear to space fans' hearts, the Artemis II mission last weekend during its wet dress rehearsal saw the SLS rocket fueled with 700,000 pounds of super cold liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen. It was something else. Propellant into the SLS providing a measly, just a little bit of thrust, 8.8 million pounds of thrust. At a wet dress rehearsal is a practice run through the operations that will precede an actual launch. Artemis's 249-hour wet dress official began Saturday January 31st. The team checked off a lot of boxes over the next day and a half, powering up both stages of Artemis II's space launch system and charging the flight batteries of the mission's Orion crew and many other things. During the wet dress rehearsal's main event on February 2nd, Monday, the tanking test, which involved loading more liquid propellant in the SLS, engineers spent several hours troubleshooting a liquid hydrogen leak in the interface used to route the cryogenic propellant into the rocket's core stage, putting them behind in the countdown. NASA engineers made the decision to check these leaks out further, and now, as well, some other issues. This is a test flight, and this is how space flight goes, so that humans don't die and the rocket doesn't explode and we get to go out to the moon. The launch may happen in the next launch window, March 6th and 9th, through the 9th, rather, and the 11th. If the mission can't make any of those dates, another window opens in April. So stay tuned for more space age rocketry. As it is, One Sky, Many Cultures, on Sky Watcher Leo T. This from a book called Moonlight Meditations by Emily Silva.
A dance is a beautifully choreographed performance of moves and steps. Each element can create beautiful chaos without guidance, and each element is just as important as the others. With patience, mastery is attained. We are all dancing stars in the choreography of the universe.
So
keep dancing, look up, look around, get just a little bit lost in space.
Skywatcher Tingle
and Leo T.